Good morning and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Monday, February 9th. Your body has a brake pedal for fat, not a metaphor, an actual molecular mechanism that tells your cells to stop producing fat, slow down enough. It's been running quietly in the background your entire life. What nobody knew until a team in Cleveland published a paper last week is that your body also has an enzyme whose only job is to override that brake, to take its foot off the pedal, and let the fat-making machinery run wide open. They found the enzyme, then they blocked it, and the mice stopped gaining weight. That's our lead today. But we're also going to talk about a number that should bother every American in this room. 17 countries. Researchers compared middle-aged adults across 17 wealthy nations. In 16 of them, life is getting better. In one, it's getting measurably worse. Guess which one? So let's start with that brake pedal. The gas your body uses to slow fat production is called nitric oxide. You've probably heard of it in the context of blood pressure or exercise, but nitric oxide does something else that researchers have only just figured out. In your liver, it latches onto the proteins responsible for making fat and cholesterol and essentially tells them to slow down. In your fat tissue, it suppresses the genetic program that builds the enzymes that create fat in the first place. Your body has a built-in system for limiting how much fat it makes. The bad news is that your body also has an enzyme whose entire job is to remove that brake. Researchers at University Hospitals and Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland just identified it. It's called SCORE2, and until this study was published in the journal Science Signaling, nobody knew it existed. SCORE2 strips nitric oxide off those fat-producing proteins, which effectively flips the switch from slow down to go. Remove the brake, and the fat-making machinery runs unchecked. Here's where it gets interesting. The research team blocked SCORE2 in mice, both genetically and with a drug they developed. The mice stopped gaining weight, their liver damage reversed, their bad cholesterol dropped. Three problems, one target. Now the higher IQ take. This matters because it's a completely different approach from what's dominating the weight loss conversation right now. GLP-1 drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy, which generated roughly $70 billion in global revenue last year, work by mimicking a gut hormone that tells your brain you're full. They suppress appetite. You eat less, you lose weight. It works, but the mechanism is essentially upstream. You're intervening at the how much do I want to eat stage. This new approach targets something downstream. It doesn't care how much you eat. It goes after the machinery that converts what you eat into stored fat. Think of it like two ways to prevent a flood. GLP-1 drugs turn down the faucet. SCORE2 inhibitors would drain the bathtub. They're not competing strategies, they're complementary ones. And if a drug can simultaneously block fat production, protect the liver, and lower cholesterol, you're looking at what the lead researcher called a first-in-class 3-in-1 therapy. There's also a timing angle here worth noting. The patent on semaglutide, the active ingredient in both Ozempic and Wegovy, expires in the United States next month. That means generic versions are coming, prices will drop, and the GLP-1 market is about to get a lot more crowded. If you're a pharmaceutical company looking for the next frontier in obesity treatment, you don't want to be the 14th semaglutide generic. You want to be the first drug that works through an entirely different mechanism. SCORE2 inhibitors could be exactly that kind of differentiated play. The caveat, and it's an important one, is that this has only been shown in mice so far. The team says clinical trials are about 18 months away. Mice are not people, and plenty of promising mouse studies don't translate. But the mechanism is elegant, the science is published in a top-tier journal, and the Harrington Discovery Institute, which has launched 46 biotech companies and put 24 medicines into clinical trials, is backing the development. If you're keeping a mental scorecard on the future of weight loss, add a new column. Appetite suppression was chapter one. Fat production itself might be chapter two. All right, let's get to that number. 17 countries. Researchers at Arizona State University just published a paper in Current Directions in Psychological Science, and they looked at four things across all 17: loneliness, depression, memory, and physical strength. What they found is that Americans born in the 1960s and early 1970s are lonelier, more depressed, physically weaker, and showing worse memory than earlier generations. That pattern, generation after generation getting worse in middle age, was not found in a single other wealthy country they studied. In most of them, especially in Scandinavia, the trends are actually going the other direction. Middle-aged adults in Nordic Europe are doing better than their parents' generation did at the same age. Let that sit for a second. This isn't about Americans being soft or making bad choices. The researchers controlled for that. This is about structure. Here's the math that tells the story. Since 2000, the European Union has increased public spending on child and family benefits by about 51%. In the United States, that number has been essentially flat. Germany offers 14 months of paid parental leave at 70% of salary, split between both parents. Childcare is subsidized. Healthcare isn't tied to employment. In the United States, if you lose your job, there's a very real chance you lose your health insurance at the exact moment you need it most. And these aren't edge cases. These are the structural conditions that shape what it feels like to be 45 with kids, aging parents, and a mortgage. The higher IQ take is this. We talk a lot about the loneliness epidemic as if it's a cultural problem, as if people just need to put their phones down and join a bowling league. And sure, social engagement helps. The researchers say so themselves. But what this study shows is that the loneliness epidemic in America is also a policy outcome. It's what happens when the richest country in the world spends more on healthcare than anyone else, but makes it harder to access. When income inequality rises, while every other peer nation holds it steady or brings it down. When education, which used to be protective against depression and cognitive decline, stops working as a buffer because the financial stress is so relentless that even a college degree can't absorb it. One of the most surprising findings is that last point. More Americans have college degrees than ever before, but the protective effect of education on mental health is weakening. The researchers suggest that chronic financial pressure and cardiovascular risk factors are eroding the cognitive benefits that education used to provide. In other words, the stress of American middle-class life is so intense that it's literally wearing down the advantage of being educated. The lead researcher, Frank Inferna, put it perfectly. The real midlife crisis in America isn't about sports cars. It's about juggling work, finances, family, and health amid weakening social supports. The data, he said, make this clear. And these findings aren't isolated. A separate AARP study released in December found that 4 in 10 Americans over 45 now report feeling lonely, up from about a third just a decade ago. The loneliest group wasn't retirees, which is what most people assume. It was people in their late 40s and 50s. Midlife, the exact population this study is talking about. And men, for the first time, are now lonelier than women, with 42% of men reporting loneliness compared to 37% of women. That's a reversal of every previous trend. So the next time someone tells you they're exhausted or that everything feels harder than it should, believe them. It's not in their head. It's in the numbers. And it's not because Americans are doing something wrong. It's because the system they're doing it in looks fundamentally different from the systems that are producing better outcomes everywhere else. That's your Monday. A hidden enzyme that could reshape the future of obesity treatment. And a 17-country study that explains why being middle-aged in America feels harder than it should. One story about the biology we didn't understand, and one about the policy choices we've been making or not making as a country. Both are the kind of thing where once you know the details, you can't unknow them. And both are absolutely worth a conversation at dinner this week. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.